I feel like I personally have been through a lot with the protests, and I think the fans, the same thing. Trying to build and then not quite getting there, trying to build and not quite getting there. But I feel like over the last sort of 18 to 20 months, we've really built in the right direction, and I think we've hit a point where it's not, obviously reached a lot of highs, but it almost just feels like in the change room, and even amongst cricket or cricket around the country, it just feels like we're now ready to sort of explode and sort of set the world alight, which is really, really cool. So yeah, to answer your question, I think it's definitely we're definitely at a point where it's not really the end, it's more the beginning of what's hopefully an exciting period.
Welcome to The Biggest Man in Cricket with your host, David Brooke.
How you been, man? It's been a while.
You say it's been a while. I saw you at the airport.
Yes, we bumped into each other on our travels, let's say.
Yes. When was that, maybe?
You had a second meeting, I think it was, and I was at some stadium visit.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, no, it's been, I'm good. It's been a crazy, I want to say 6 months, but probably a year for myself. Very busy, a lot going on, a lot of travels, as you've mentioned. Coming to the end of the year now, I think I'm starting to feel, you always hear people in the corporate world speak about like sort of end of year fatigue or whatever the word is.
Yeah.
I think I'm reaching that point. So yeah, it's nice that the year's coming to a close, and yeah, one more big tour, and then wouldn't say less important stuff, but more
home,
time at home.
A little bit more.
Exactly.
You've got a house and stuff, but you don't really get to enjoy it, right?
Well, on that, I've been doing some renovations.
And okay. Look at you.
Yeah, I know, I'm growing up. Been doing some renovations. It's been ongoing for about 2 months now. So it's at 60 days. I've been present for three of those days. So it's
you actually worked out beautifully.
Yeah, it's worked out perfectly. I haven't had to deal with cleaning up. I haven't had to deal with letting them in and letting them out. So yeah, it's been perfect.
That's cool, buddy. It has been a crazy year. It feels like it's been a crazy year, but it feels like it's been an amazing year as well. Like, I think, is it one of those years where in a couple of years' time, you're really going to look back on this? We're just enjoying this moment right now, but it's only in a couple of years' time where you're really going to feel, wow, that was actually an insane year.
Yeah, I think, I say to younger guys, I'm still quite young, but when guys come, especially into the Western Province setup, and we have like a good game or there's an achievement or something, one of my messages is always probably won't realize how important or how big that achievement is now. You're probably going to sit in 2 or 3 years' time and reflect on that game or that moment, and it'll hit you. And I think for me, this year is one of those sort of things that I'd put in that category. County cricket, the World Test Championship, 100 at Newlands, SA20 auction going very nicely. So many things personally also that has been really, really cool, that I feel like it's all been a bit overwhelming. But I think, if I sit back in 10 years' time on a chair or a hanging chair in my newly renovated garden, I'll probably reminisce on 2025 as a really, really cool
And it feels like you're kind of only getting started. Does that feel like it as well? It feels like this team, the setup, the protest setup, whether it's white ball, test team, there seems to be like this team is only getting started. Is that a fair comment?
I think it's spot on. I think there's been I feel like I personally have been through a lot with the protests, and I think the fans, the same thing, trying to build and then not quite getting there, trying to build and not quite getting there. But I feel like over the last sort of 18 to 20 months, we've really built in the right direction. And I think we've hit a point where it's not, obviously reached a lot of highs, but it almost just feels like in the change room, and even amongst cricket or cricket around the country, it just feels like we're now ready to sort of explode and sort of set the world alight, which is really, really cool. So yeah, to answer your question, I think it's definitely we're definitely at a point where it's not not really the end. It's more the beginning of what's hopefully an exciting period.
We had your coach Shooks on the show a couple of episodes ago, and he spoke about, you know, and I probed him on the culture in the team, and we've been together in team cultures together at Western Province and Cape Cobras back in the day. And we spoke about organic culture versus kind of forced culture. Is it the fact that most of you guys have played, say, under 19 together, you've gone through the careers, ups and downs together, one guy gets an opportunity earlier than expected, but somehow in 2025, you've got a bunch of guys that are similar age that have done the hard yards in domestic cricket, and just playing for each other, going out there and playing for each other?
Yeah, I think on that, I think the group that we have now, like you mentioned, probably 90% of us have played together, whether it be at under 19 level, schoolboy level, at franchise level, had different tastes of the Proteas. I think of someone like Dane Patterson. They had a taste of playing for the Proteas a lot earlier than maybe myself, but then I've had a bit of a taste before the likes of like Bedders or whatever. Then we got Fionn, who's been there before all of us, and he sort of experienced different things. But we've also all played together at some point, and now we, in that setup, we've all become really good friends. We've all learned a lot about each other off the field and sort of personally. And I think the combination of all of that has made for a really good environment. And I think, like you said, a very organic organic environment. I think, not to go off on a tangent, but I've been a part of a lot of environments where you feel like, exactly like you said, it's you're forcing a situation, or you want there to be a good vibe and you want everyone to have fun, and you're sort of putting a lot of pressure on that, where this Protea is set up, at least for the test side, which is what I'm a part of. It feels like everyone just rocks up each morning and goes about their day in the only way that they know how, and it collectively just makes an unbelievable change room to be part of, which I think is really cool.
That recent test series in Pakistan where you guys lost the first test convincingly and bounced back. For me, that was the epitome of this side. 5 years ago, the Protea side would have lost that series 2-0. It feels like there was a, put that in the background, we got outplayed, let's move on and let's fight back and at least get a draw out of the series.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that. I think something that we spoke about is exactly that this team, although we 1-0 down, this team doesn't go to the next test match and lose. This team goes to the next test match, wins the game, and gets out of Pakistan 1-1, where, without speaking negatively of those that have come before us, I think previously South African test sides would be in that situation. Mm. And I think the sort of expected thing was, okay, they'll go to the second test. They might be a bit better, but it's going to be 2-0 and they'll get walked over. And I think that's, yeah, like I said, that's something that this team has sort of prided ourselves on, where when there's challenges, when there's sort of adversity, when things are difficult. It just feels like this team doesn't really know how to accept that, which is a really cool space to be in.
But it looks like you guys are having fun while you're doing it.
Too much fun, I think, sometimes.
Like, just, I mean, you know, obviously Pakistan's a difficult place to tour. Obviously, security reasons and stuff, you can't actually get out of the hotel much. So give us, like, some stories of what happens in the hotel there, in the corridors or in the restaurants or...
Yeah, I mean, my tour life basically revolves around waking up, seeing if David's messaged me. If David hasn't messaged me, I'll message him. Oh, yeah, breakfast. And I go down and have breakfast with Bedders, and he tells me what we're going to do for the rest of the day. So that's pretty much my day on a tour to Pakistan. But no, we've been to Bangladesh as a group, which I think was a really cool, I want to say learning for our team, but sort of like a nice blueprint of what we can do on tours like Pakistan and potentially India that we're going on now. We've got a poker group, which I think has been really cool. Nice. Guys are surprisingly really into their gym in this team, which is something that guys do a lot of. But yeah, there's a lot of card games, a lot of poker, like I said, a lot of, I say, team dinners. The amount of times that two guys will rock up to dinner and before you know it, the whole team's sitting having dinner. And that happens sort of every night on tour.
Nice.
in Pakistan, it probably happened every night, which is really, really cool. But yeah, I think those lighthearted things like playing poker, playing card games, guys watching the horse racing and stuff like that together, that sort of keeps us sane on a tour like Pakistan. And to be honest, if I look back at our sort of last 18 months, Pakistan and Bangladesh have probably been the two more enjoyable trips just because of that. You with your teammates, but like I've mentioned, it's actually just a big group of mates, which has been pretty cool.
That's very cool, because I mean, obviously, if you go to the UK, you go to Australia, you and Betters go out for a romantic walk in the mornings. Other guys do their things. Like, you don't actually do a lot of things together as a team. So sometimes when you're in that team environment and you are cornered into a hotel.
Exactly. And I think Bangladesh, because it was quite early in our sort of cycle, this Test Championship cycle, that really brought the team quite close. And I think that's why we saw such a togetherness throughout the campaign. So it's definitely, it's really, really cool.
Just give me a bit of insight into like these, it's something that we obviously don't get a lot of three-matched Test Series anymore as South Africa. Mm. So the mentality that goes into a two-match Test Series, especially away from home, is there a mentality of let's at least try and get out of here with a draw to concentrate on the home series where we know we could possibly push for a win in the series?
It's a difficult one to answer, because you start every series wanting to win 2-0, and I think especially when it's only two games, the mindset is like you want to win. I'm someone that's very realistic, so I sort of look at a tour like Pakistan, and internally, if you said we're going to go 1-1, that's probably a really good result. But yeah, this team, like I mentioned, their mentality, and I think the mentality that Shooks brings, competitive guys like Ashipi that's involved there, it's all about winning. And I think, these away tours that we've had, albeit it's only two Test match series, we've really just had the mindset of we want to try and win 2-0 everywhere we go. So, yeah, I think that sort of speaks to how well we've done, just that attitude and mindset towards winning.
You mentioned Ashipi. He's been a little bit of a theme throughout your... You don't really have a choice whether to like him or not. He's there. He was your provincial coach, and he's now your batting coach at the Proteas. How important has he been as part of your career?
I think something that's... I say this, I hope he does really like me. I think he likes me a lot, and every team that he's a part of, I just sort of seem to find my way there. So I'm hoping that's because he actually does like me, and potentially thinks I'm not too bad at cricket also. But yeah, Ashipi's been very instrumental in my career. He gave me my first professional contract. I joke with him now, he didn't really have a choice. But yeah, he gave me my first professional contract. He was... You know, you always speak about like a kid growing up or whatever, their first however many years are where the parents like instill what type of person they're going to end up being, whatever. Ashipi being that coach that I had in my first 3 or 4 years as a professional cricketer has really shaped who I've become, probably as a person and as a cricketer. He's someone that I've always found a lot of comfort in, not necessarily always cricket, but just life in general. Like to think he's become a good friend in sort of off-field stuff. So yeah, he's been a massive contributing factor to where I am today. I think I'm really fortunate that I've had someone like him sort of be in my corner and have my back throughout my career.
How important is that for a youngster? I mean, when you first came into the Cobra setup, you were replacing guys like Dane Villas, who was a legend at the Cobras. Yeah. Obviously established wicketkeeper in like international standard, and you came in as a youngster. I remember when you first walked in, the scrawny ginger kid, but somehow you were chirping guys left, right and center, and I'm like, okay, this kid is a confident kid, but he's got the game to back it up. Like, how was it coming into that environment?
I think the chirps are just like to hide my insecurities. Like you said, I was such a little, small little ginger fella.
Yeah.
If I didn't speak up for myself, within a week, I'd be bullied into retiring from cricket. But, you know, you got Pitty, Pato, trying to think who else, Putters, Rawls, Basil Levy. I mean, you got those guys there. If I didn't speak up, I would have, I think that would have been my last season of professional cricket. I would have been sat behind a laptop in some office somewhere.
Did you do anything like a little bit cheeky in the change room? Did you take Baz's place or Putters's place in the change room just to stir the pot a little bit.
I remember, I don't actually know what was said, but obviously like all teams have WhatsApp groups. And something happened with Levy. I can't remember what it was, but I went onto the WhatsApp group and I chirped him. Can't remember what it was, so the story's not going to be as good. But hopefully it'll come to me. And he just replied, "Your life is hard enough as it is, Fanta Pants. Just keep quiet." And since I looked at it, I was like, yeah, well, he's put me in my box there.
Yeah.
And since then, I've actually become quite close to him. I mean, I don't speak to him often, don't see each other often, but every time I do see Baz, there's always a good relationship. I'd love to know what I actually said, because it would have been quite funny.
It definitely would have been for Baz to react like that.
No, I know. Well, that's the thing. I think it would have been something along the lines of like, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but it must have been funny, and his response was priceless.
To be fair, when a senior player responds like that, it's often a sign of respect, right? It's like,
yes,
I acknowledge your chirp, and respectfully, it's part of the game, and I think that you backed it up with performances, which I think earn you a lot of respect. Early doors, you knock the door down straight away. I mean, you put in the hard yards, you're putting in big scores. And how important was that for your introduction into domestic cricket?
Very important. I think you go into a change room like the Cobras at the time, and you look across and there's Andrew Puttick. I'm a bit of a badger, so I know about all of these guys. I know their numbers.
Did you have a Putters poster on your wall in the
No, not quite.
Who did you have a poster of?
I've got a photo. It's not a photo. It's like a puzzle that I built of JK. So that was like framed. And then I think I had something of AB de Villiers. Those are the two guys that were my sort of idols.
We'll talk about your link to JK in a bit, but carry on with your story.
Yeah, so I mean, you walk into a change room, Andrew Puttick, Justin Ontong, Levy. I don't think Buren was there that season. Might have been his last season. Buren Hendricks, Dane Patterson, Dane Pitt. You know, you've got a change room of Stian van Sail, a change room of guys that have played, Wayne Parnell, played a lot of international cricket, and you, this small fry that's, I think I might have been 18 or 19 at the time, got these massive eyes, like you can't believe who's in the, and then your coach is Ashwell Prince, who's like a superstar. And I think I remember probably it would have been my debut game. I was actually rooming with Marex, and I went to bed that night, couldn't fall asleep, and I just remember thinking to myself, Hash was actually playing in my debut game. I remember thinking to myself, whatever you do tomorrow, like, just don't make a fool of yourself. Like, you got these guys, just like, be okay. Just make sure, like, you don't make a fool of yourself.
Don't run out of your mum, love.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And then, I think first got a boundary to start off, and then I ended up nicking a ball that was off the stumps, off the pitch. It was so wide, and I walked back into the change room and pity chirped me or whatever. I think just a hunger to, not necessarily want to do well for myself, but more hunger to show them that I belong in the same change room as them. Show them that I can play with them in a team and still contribute in some way. I think those are all motivating factors. And fortunately, I was able to put in some performances that I think made them respect me a little bit.
It feels like, just shooting forward to the current day for now, it feels like that you are that person now in that setup, watching these youngsters come through, the Daniel Smith and these guys come through, and you are able to then create an environment for them to be able to shine.
Yeah, I think something that I've really, really enjoyed about my sort of captaincy journey at Western Province is exactly that. Bettis and I started at the Cobras at a similar time, and something that we always spoke about was how we want to be as senior players one day. So I remember us, I would have been 19, 20, Bettis would have been 23, 24. And we always spoke about, if we are able to get to a point of being senior players, what could we make the change room like? What environment could we create for younger guys to come in and thrive the way we did?
Nice.
Yeah, so being able to now be in that role with guys that are my mates, David, Tony, Georgie Linder, Beezy, to be able to now be sort of in control of the change room and have a massive impact in how the environment is. It's really, really cool. Also really get a lot of pride. I mean, Daniel, the way he played yesterday, that gives me a lot of pride. I mean, he's someone that as a youngster came into the change room and we put a lot of effort into him and try to make him feel welcome. So you see performances like that, and that's sort of like a proud parent moment. Something that I've really enjoyed.
In South African cricket, do we put too much pressure on youngsters, you know, coming through? You know, you look at Diewald or Leandre or Kwena, 1920, some guys come into their own 24, 25. You know, each to their own, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know how you're getting all these questions. It feels like every question you're asking, like, something's just happened. So we were sitting in the dugout yesterday, and obviously we got off to a bit of a shaky start. Valentine and Daniel Smith are playing a blinder. We need, what, 5 runs and over to win the game. The game's in the bag. And then Ollie Whitehead and John James go out. We lose 2 wickets in 2 balls again. And Ollie Whitehead, 19 years old, and John James, I think, is 19 or 20, are now in the middle after, I know he's a youngster, but he's been playing a long time. Daniel Smith has just exploded. And we're watching these two guys, and one of them gets 2 dot balls, and you can feel in the dugout there's a bit of anxiousness. Come on, like, you know, we've just seen what's happened. Like, why are they struggling, whatever? And Rawls turns around and he says, boys, it's a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old playing professional cricket. Like,
David's on Super Sport, the captain.
Exactly. Like, it's there's people in the crowd, which is something that they won't be used to. They're playing at Newlands, which is massive pressure already. Not to put anything on myself, but you've got the test wicketkeeper captaining your side. There's nerves there.
You contributed a lot with
I did. I played a Buta Dipano role in that game. But yeah, I mean, there's so much. And our immediate thing is to be like, well, why are they not hitting every single ball out the ground?
Yeah.
And Rawls is just like, guys, they're 19, 20. And it's sort of I thought about it today. You look at our team. Jeez, we expect guys to come out of school these days and be a Diewald Brewers. He's like a once in a every second generation type of player. But every time someone comes out of school that's half decent, boom, headlines, and we expect them to be a superstar. And it doesn't happen that quick. I mean, Faf du Plessis, probably one of our greatest white ball players, debuted at what, 27, 28? So to answer your question, yes, we do.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. I think there's a lot of pressure on the youngsters, but they need to also play, right? I mean, how do they learn otherwise, you know? So with these tours and all that happening at the moment, there's a lot of testing of the depth around the country, but that also comes with opportunity, which is also exciting to see. And it's nice to see, you know, back when you first started, you were playing 3-day cricket with Western Province B, and you were playing a lot of 3-day cricket. These youngsters don't get that opportunity, right? I mean, some of them are even, I'm sure you're probably a little bit jealous, they're going to Hong Kong for the Hong Kong Sixes coming up.
I mean, and I'm sitting here with the biggest man in cricket.
I mean, there's worse things in life, eh?
Yeah, I mean, this is what I have to do. But no, it's spot on. It's spot on. It's
in a way your upbringing in terms of cricket. I mean, and I want to talk about briefly about your school days, because you were very well known in school cricket circles, and obviously with that comes a lot of pressure, right? I mean, you and Betters was a couple of years older than you at school, but from a Wynberg point of view, you guys were touted to be provincial Proteas players. How was that growing up?
I think growing up, I never really felt the pressure. And I think to this day, I'm always someone that sort of, I don't want to say likes the limelight or whatever, but I'm always someone that if I know that I'm the best player in the team and I know that everyone's speaking about me being the best player in the team, that's like, yes, I'm going to show you that. And I think for my sort of, definitely my sort of last 2 or 3 years at school, every time I walked out to play, I definitely felt like everyone knows, like, this is the guy or whatever, which is something that I enjoyed. I think taking that into my sort of under-19 cricket and then moving into semi-pro cricket, it then becomes a lot harder because you a superstar at school, and then you walk into a team like the Western Province semi-pro side where everyone in your team was the superstar at school.
Yeah.
And now you're finding your way and you're sort of finding your feet. Mm. And so is everyone else. So, I think that transition from school to under 19 to semi-pro cricket to professional cricket, I think that's where you lose a lot of guys, because I think that's probably the toughest sort of period of a professional cricketer's career to navigate. I think once you sort of get into a professional space or whatever, things become a lot more manageable. But definitely that sort of transition from schoolboy to under 19, semi-pro as it was then, professional cricket, as someone who's has a lot expected of you, that's probably the most challenging period.
The Wynberg boys have got a tradition of planting trees for every 100.
Correct.
First question is, how many do you have, and who has more between you and David Bellingham? I'm not even going to compare you to Jacques Callis, but let's hear, maybe you know how many Jacques Callis has.
I think Jacques, can I start with asking, does he have three?
I'm not sure. You're the white big old boy.
So I think he has three, which is the same
three
amount.
Centuries. It's a tree for every century.
A tree for every century. I think he might have got three first team centuries, which seems like a little.
Yeah.
But I think all good players get three centuries for Wynberg first team, because I also got three.
Okay.
So there's that link there.
Yeah.
I think Bellers probably has maybe five trees. But the interesting thing about these trees, and I just did a talk at Wynberg Boys last week. Yeah, would have been last week. We went back to the school, David and I, we did a talk there. And I've learned that I have one tree and he has one tree. Because you've got to, when you get 100, you got to plant your tree.
Mm.
And I just never ever did it. So I got 300s. I just never bothered planting my tree. So I didn't have any trees. I don't know what happened to him, but the school have actually planted a tree for David and I.
Oh, wow.
So I think he's meant to have five. I'm meant to have three. But I don't think either of us were too interested in doing it.
Physically planting it.
Yeah. I mean, you know me with money.
I was going to say, maybe there was a financial contribution.
Yeah, I'm going to say it was $800 a tree. And I thought $800... If I work on the interest over the next 20 years, I'm not planting the tree. But yeah, so we now each have a tree, if I'm not mistaken.
Jeez, that's cool.
Yeah.
Richard Lever is 12.
Oh, okay. Rich Bears will be on the phone to me saying, just remind Scalzi about 12 trees.
Yeah, but the thing is, he played from when he was, I think,
using
7 years old. He played for the first team. So what did he play? 1,056 games, I think. So 1,200 is an appalling effort.
Love it. Obviously, so, I mean, the link with Jacques Callis, and some people will know this, but there's a thing called the Jacques Callis bursary.
Yes.
It's a very well-known bursary in Cape Town schools, and you happen to have the honor of being one of the recipients. Just tell us about that. You weren't at Wynberg before. Where were you before?
So this is actually quite a good story. I went to Edgemead Primary. That's where my family lived. So I went to Edgemead Primary. And then I sort of knew bits of the story of how I ended up at Wynberg, but I got told the full story a couple of nights ago by the headmaster, or the then headmaster, Keith Richardson. So yeah, went to Edgemead Primary, applied to go to Rondebosch, Sachs, and a few other schools, got accepted into Rondebosch. So I went and you'd have like the open day, went to the open day, got my blazer, had my backpack. I even had my cricket cap already, cricket whites, pullover, had everything. Met my classmates, Dejan Khalim, we're gonna be going to school together. And then my mom walks in one Friday and she says, do you wanna go for an interview? This is now, must be November, December, so it's like, it's done now.
Yeah.
Do you want to go for an interview at Wynberg? So I was like, no, I don't really want to do that. And she's like, okay, well, you're going for an interview at Wynberg. We're going to go tomorrow or next week, whatever. So I'm like, okay, go to this interview. Keith Richardson's there. He walks us around the school, explains this is where Jacques Callis went. I was like, oh, well, that's... Oh,
threw that in straight away.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Good marketing.
JK Oval, no, awesome. Explained the whole tree thing. And I was like, yeah, like, this school's really cool, but, like, I'm not interested. I'm going to Rondebosch. And then a week later, my mom walks in and she's like, listen, you're going to Wynberg. you've been offered the Jacques Callis bursary. yeah, so you're going to go to Wynberg? And I was like, no, I don't want to go. Anyway, she convinced me. It's obviously a massive opportunity. She convinced me to go to Wynberg, and then she threw in that she's going to be shipping me off. I've got to go to hostel on top of that. So I was like, this has turned out to be the worst like transition into high school that I could have possibly imagined. But it ended up being an incredible time, probably the best 5 years of my life. Hostel was awesome. But I think, you know, when you're that young, you don't sort of realize what's going on. And I mean, school's very expensive. Don't know the financial background of it, whatever, but I think going to Rondebosch would have been quite a stretch for me financially. Mm. Knowing sort of how expensive those sort of schools are and stuff now. So yeah, without me knowing it, being offered the Jacques Cullis bursary and being able to go to probably one of the best sporting schools in the country, one of the best academic schools in the country, to be able to go to hostel and sort of be looked after from that point of view, I'll forever be grateful to Jacques himself and the foundation.
Would you have ever played with Betters at school? He was, what, 3 years of three years about
story,
you?
If you'd like. Please. Good story.
We have all day.
I played three games with David Bellingham.
Yeah.
Three first team games. My first game, my debut for the first team. He says this didn't happen, but it happened.
Okay.
Debut for the first team. I'm grade 9, so I'm very young, and walk into the change room, whatever, playing against an English school full of 19-year-olds. I'm shitting myself like it's your first game for the first team, whatever. David says, well, you can go open the batting and face the first ball. First ball, out. Sure. So, yeah, he threw me to the wolves there. I got a first baller. And then we were chasing like 110. He ended up coming in at 3 and got 95. That 110 that we were chasing. So worked out really nicely for him.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we played three games together. I didn't really know David too well at school.
Mm.
But yeah, became really, really close afterwards.
Listen, your story with Betters, that we'll create a Netflix documentary in years to come with your friendship there. I mean, it kind of culminated at Lord's. I mean, I was there. I've known you and Betters for a number of years now. And all of a sudden, we were at the home of cricket. And these two...
Getting goosebumps, actually.
It's crazy. It was... Just imagine being there, from knowing you guys from when you were youngsters, just making your way in, to see you guys at Lord's.
Hmm.
I mean, the story couldn't have been written any better. Temba and Aiden did their job.
Yeah, we needed our moment.
You had two Wynberg old boys, two mates, like who had been through fun times, tough times, all of those kind of times. And there you were at Lord's, about to hit the winning runs and etched into South African history. What were you guys saying to each other in the middle there? Because I can imagine there were some funny stories there.
So I'll start with what we were saying when we were out there, but there's a moment that as soon as anyone mentions Betters and I being out there, that I straight away go back to. So what I'll start off with saying is, I obviously nicked the ball before we got the nicked it to the keeper, should have been out. Yeah. I was so nervous. I think I played a shot off Mitchell Starc and I must have missed the ball by about a meter. And Nathan Lyon goes across to David Bellingham. They've played against each other in County Group. They sort of know each other. Goes to Betters and he's like, you need to go speak to your mate. Like, you guys have won it. Like, you need to go speak to him. You need one run. Just tell him to calm down. And Betters says, I can't say anything to him that's going to take him, like, that's going to save him from this. Betters just came over to me. We were speaking about, I think when I came in, we needed like 6 runs or whatever. Betters was speaking to me about what's our celebration going to be when we get there. Do you want to be the one hitting the winning runs or do I want to do it? Whatever. And I'm just thinking, David, I can't see the ball at the moment. Like I'm so nervous. I don't have any time to think about any of that. That was sort of the conversation out there. Very, very lighthearted, very sort of chilled from his side and from my side, just absolute panic. When anyone brings up that moment of us being at Lord's and you sort of speak about like the journey that we've come together and just it culminating to us being at Lord's, there's a moment that I can vividly remember. It was would have been David's first season for the Cape Cobras, so my second season. we're playing a T20 game against the Lions at the Wanderers. We're staying in the Proteas Hotel, right opposite the Wanderers there. We had just come back from practice, and we're still sitting in our training kits or whatever, sitting on the bed. I don't want to go too much into money, but I think I might have been earning like maybe 200,000 rand a year, and bettors would have just been on a contract just low, which is like 180,000 rand a year, which is like contracts today, that's like the
bare minimum.
Yeah, exactly. And we're speaking about like, what do we need to do in this T20 game and this T20 tournament to get a new contract next year? Like, and I remember us going through the stats of the season before of like what the bare minimum was for guys that are like still in the team and stuff. And I just think about like, we were there in this room speaking about how we're going to play the next game, how we're going to get a contract for the next, next season. Like what's the bare minimum we have to do just to like keep our jobs, if you want to, want to say it like that. And 8 years later or whatever it is, we won a World Test Championship at the home of cricket, Lords, against the best team ever, Australia.
Special.
It's, yeah, it's crazy.
What it, like your immediate, when you walked into the change room, I feel that you might have like chirped coach or something like that, or the coach, he, Shooks did mention that, that, that he, when you nicked the ball, when you played that shot, he was going to kill you or whatever it was. Tell us what you said as you walked into the change room. I feel like there's a quote here.
I think I'm going to disappoint you. The reason I say that is because all I remember is Corbin Bosch sprinting from wherever he was and basically rugby tackling bettors and I. And then Kevin Peterson shoving a mic in our face, trying to do an interview or whatever whilst we trying to lap the moment up. But no, I think the sort of the biggest thing, and I said this the other day, I'm not going to give you a good quote, unfortunately.
That's fine.
But the best thing about that whole moment was straight after we had won, or straight after the winning runs was it, there was a section, you were there, so I don't know if you would have seen, where all of our families had actually been gathered around and they were standing on the boundary rope and they walked onto the field. And we got to, we got to sort of be with our family on, on the field and then do a lap of honor. And for me, that was incredible because we had been so much in a bubble for the 18 months leading up to that. We obviously, you're trying to do it for your country, you're trying to make people proud, but our big message was, you know, we need to focus on what's in the change room. And we never sort of, in the nicest way possible, we didn't really pay too much attention to the public and those around us and our family supporting. We were just so involved in ourselves. Yeah. So to see the families like walk on and then to get to walk around the crowd, whatever, that was like,
that was special.
Sure. This is like, you now sort of realize what we've actually done and you sort of like can step out of the bubble and appreciate everyone, which was pretty cool.
I must say that from a cricket lover point of view and being the biggest man in cricket, even I was very emotional that day just to see that, just, you know, from above, from, you know, from my seats there, was just incredible to see our youngsters doing that job against such an experienced like Australian side that nobody backed our team to do. Was just, it was something that honestly was quite incomprehensible. Like,
I don't think many people gave us a chance. So to be able to do it was I don't think there'll be a day in my cricketing career that could possibly be better than that. I was speaking to one of my mates probably a couple of days ago about like what's next, what's the driver, what are you trying to do now? And to be honest with you, I still haven't been able to find an answer as to what I could possibly want to do that would be better than that.
Mm. You did actually, you make a habit of hitting the winning runs.
I was hoping.
And, so I want to show you.
I just love this because David absolutely hates it.
I want to show you a clip from your coach, and I want to just find out from you your reaction to Shukri Conrad. And this was a question to him about you hitting the winning runs for Notts to win the county championship. So I'm going to give you my my Oppo phone. We've got a sponsor of our podcast now. We now that we've got a sponsor, we can get massive names like you.
I did want to say, I've heard that I'm number 11, and it's obviously because the budget has now just leveled up a notch.
Exactly. So I just want to show you this and just get your immediate reaction to this. If you can just press, put the volume up here, and just press play when you can.
Volume on.
Yeah, so press play there.
Your place, Wikipedia, it's going to be...
No, I don't know how we're going to keep this all quiet. Yeah. Like, tough enough keeping it quiet. Now it's another thing to Google who's hit the winning run to win Notts the County Championship in 2025.
You're going to be unplayable. He's unplayable at the best of time.
Spot on, coach.
Your place, Wikipedia, it's going to be...
Do you know what's actually funny? You sent me a message straight after.
Yeah.
I don't have it on me now, but the message went something along the lines of exactly that. Oh God, now we've got something else to Google. Well done.
That is a Shook's comment, like down to the
T. Yeah. Oh, that's, I love that. That's brilliant. And he is, to be fair to him, he's correct. Every opportunity that I get to mention the fact that I've hit the winning runs in the World Test Championship final and to win Notts the County Championship, I will take that opportunity. And I think I've taken it probably more than I should have already. And I will continue to do so. And I'm also, everyone that has heard me speak about that knows that no one else has done that.
Yeah.
So I'm the only person ever to do that.
100%.
So yeah, you'll be hearing a lot more of it.
How was that experience for you at Notts? You've wanted to play county cricket, yes, since you started playing. I mean, to eventually get that opportunity at Notts, you had an opportunity last year already, but just tell us about that environment and how maybe it differs to what you used to back home.
Honestly, it's difficult to say or to speak more highly of my time at Notts. So getting an opportunity to play county cricket is always something that I've wanted to do, and it's always something that I felt would benefit my game. Mm. But I never expected it to have such an impact on me like this has had.
Mm.
From a cricketing point of view, yes, but also from, I mean, the impact that, I mean, I've only been there for a year and a bit, but the impact that a lot of the people in that club have had on my life has been awesome. I went there at quite a challenging time last year. I signed for 3 games, and they needed to, by bare minimum, not lose any of those games and draw 2 of those games. Well, yeah, not lose any of those games to sort of stay in Division 1.
Mm.
So I got there when it was sort of a club in not a great space. I managed to contribute to that, and then got the opportunity to go for a full season now this season. Yeah, to be a part of that sort of fighting to not get relegated, to then be a part of this campaign where we went on to win was incredible. But yeah, like I say, the opportunity to work with some of the coaches there, the friends that I've made in that space, the way that they've treated me, the way that their members have treated me has been incredible. I don't know, I am going back there next year. I don't know if I'll ever play county cricket at another county other than Notts, just because I think Notts is now on the same level probably as what Western Province means to me.
That's amazing. And it's a different culture there, right? I mean, it's completely different. At a 4-day game, you've got 5,000 people there. I mean, that must have been quite a shock to you.
It was. Like I say, I mean, you play a 4-day game back home, and you've got Auntie Kim, my mom, sitting in the stands, and that's about as many people as are going to be there. And then you go to Notts where, you know, you walk down for... I remember walking down the stairs for my warm-up on day one, and there's like 30 people, which sounds like a little, but 30 people asking for like you to sign this, autographs, whatever. Before the first ball's bowled, there's a full ring of people in the ground. You know, they understand their cricket. They really support their cricket. It's a really nice thing to be a part of, and I'm... Yeah, very, very grateful to Notts for having me, and hopefully for extending the...
You play a bit of the white ball stuff as well.
I didn't. I
will only next year you'll play a bit of white ball. Do you sometimes get do you feel like you're pigeonholed a little bit as a Red Bull cricketer? Because I look at you've played for, you know, T20, SA20, Pretoria Capitals, you're going to Pole Royals this coming season. Do you feel that sometimes, like, your value in T20 cricket is not seen, and it's only when you get the opportunity to show your value, people then see your value in white ball cricket?
I do think I have been pigeonholed. I joked, we were sitting at breakfast in Pakistan probably a week or two ago, and we were speaking about, like, T20s or whatever, and had a bit of a go at Shooks. I think sometimes they forget that I've got the highest individual score in the SA20. Yeah,
I was there for that game.
Yeah, most sixes in a SA20 game also. I do feel, I mean, T20 cricket, I think I'm good enough to contribute in leagues, and I feel like I definitely add value to teams, and I'm grateful that Paul Rose have bought me, and I think I've been given a nice opportunity there. Playing for the Proteas, I'm not quite sure if my game's there yet in T20 cricket, but I definitely feel like 50 over cricket, sort of feel like I've been pigeonholed a little bit. I think sometimes people get carried away with boundary hitting and big sixes. And I've seen guys, I'm not speaking about the Proteas now, but just in general, get a lot of credit for their explosiveness and their fast scoring rates or whatever in white ball cricket. And then I go and look at the strike rates, and I maybe don't hit the biggest sixes or don't hit a lot of sixes or whatever it may be. But if you look at strike rates, I feel like I'm up there with the best in the country. So, yeah, I think it's been probably the more frustrating part of my career is the white ball aspect of it. But yeah, the nice thing with these leagues is you don't really get pigeonholed in leagues. They look at the numbers and you get bought based on the numbers, which is, yeah, everyone was quite shocked when I got bought for what I did by the Paul Rawls, but I think I was probably the only one that thought, oh, that's pretty much fair for what I've done.
Well, I actually think that I've watched you a number of times play at Borland Park, and your game suits exactly what Borland Park needs. There's big boundaries, twos and threes that are readily available there, pressure situations, low scores that need somebody to grind a bit. Like, I actually think that they've recruited brilliantly.
Me too. For that.
Me your too. Bank manager also thanked you for your, that's why you're doing your renovations.
I did. I mean, the first person to message me was my agent. So
yeah.
Saying well done. Yeah, I think it's actually quite a nice fit, like you said, like you mentioned. Pretoria probably suits my game from an explosive point of view a little bit better, but I think for Paul Royals, my sort of expertise or whatever, I think it will fit nicely into that team.
You've always played that role of a dogged, you know, not necessarily like the most beautiful technique of all time, but beautiful hands, beautiful.
Yeah, Shook says that. He says, Colsey, I've said it in one or two interviews, I don't like how you bat, but I like what you're able to put out.
It's not about how you look, right? Yeah. It's the effectiveness of it and what you bring to the team. Do you sometimes find that coaches who have never seen you before, like, don't actually know your real value until they see you in a team environment? And, you know, like, we actually spoke about this briefly with Pitty, Dane Pitt, where a lot of coaches don't recognize his value inside the change room, behind the scenes, compared to just what he does outside on the field.
Yeah, spot on. I think, for me, I think fortunately or unfortunately, that's sort of the type of player I am. You get guys that look beautiful and their numbers don't always have to add up to the best, because just the way that they look sort of gets coaches interested. It sounds so nice of his bat, or the way he plays a drive, you just know he's going to be good. I don't really fit into that mold. I'm someone that, and I've always said, it doesn't really matter how it looks, but, you know, 50 is 50, whether you get it an ugly way or a pretty way or whatever. And I think, unfortunately, that's just how I am. I don't have the greatest technique, and I probably not always enjoyable to watch, but I'd like to see myself as, when the chips are down, I'm someone that gets the job done. And I think fortunately, people that really understand cricket do tend to appreciate what I bring to a team from a cricketing point of view, which I think is quite nice. But on a point like Pitty, I think the value of an individual to a change room often gets often gets sort of underappreciated. You know, the performances are one thing, and the numbers that someone's able to put out is one thing. But what they bring to an environment is a whole other thing. I mean, you look at someone like Dane Patterson. I know Shooks has spoken quite a lot about him, but he's someone that I'd probably select him in our 15 for every single tour. And you can tell him you're not going to play a single game, just because of what he brings to the change room, how he is around the group. The contribution that he makes to the environment makes us a better team.
Skolzy, the one thing that that I love about you is that you've always been a very relatable guy, and you've always been you're very close to your inner circle, your family and stuff. How, just as we kind of reaching the crescendo of this episode, I think I want to give you that opportunity to just pay tribute to your mom and your grandparents and your family, your late dad. Like, just to you come from that, and the one thing I think you are relatable to the general fan is you are that person. You're a genuine person who's come from a loving family.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the first thing I'll say is sometimes when you're on TV and you're playing professional sports, whatever, people don't always take into account the human being behind the professional sportsman, sports person. And I think I'm someone that's always tried to, in the way that I play, in the way that I carry myself, always just be the person that I've been raised to be, and sort of try to reflect best, like you said, the inner circle that I have around me. I mean, the appreciation that I have for my grandparents, firstly, I don't think I'll ever be able to thank them enough for the role that they played in my career. Like I said, you don't always sort of see what goes on behind the scenes. My grandparents driving me to practices at ridiculous hours of the day, them living in Fishhook and driving to fetch me at school in Edgemead and then taking me to practice here and there. I'll forever be grateful to them. You know, my brother is someone that I'll always speak very highly of. I don't think I said it the other day in another interview that I did. I don't think he realizes the sacrifice that he made for me, but I see what he's done for me. And yeah, he's someone that I'll always be massively appreciative to. My mom still to this day, she's probably the most influential person that I've had in my life and in my career. And then yeah, like you mentioned, my dad passed away a couple of years ago now. A relationship that I'll always appreciate. I think being able to have all of those people around me that have supported me so dearly and still support me to this day is probably the reason that I am where I am. So yeah, to them I'll be forever grateful.
Your mom came all the way yesterday. She was there with her popcorn, and you decided to go out first of all. Is that how you treat your mom?
And you know what I heard?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is true, but I had some mates there. My partner was there, and apparently, the ball went in the air. I got a golden duck, first ball duck. The ball went in the air. Apparently, my mom just went, "Oh no, Carl! Oh no, Carl!" Caught, and she looks to I don't know who was sitting next to her and says, "I don't know what to do now. Do I sit here and watch, or do I just pack my stuff up and go home? He's wasted my day."
He's completely wasted my day. But it was, listen, to see your mom at all those games, like, she's an absolute stalwart. And I really, like, I dig her, like, so much. She's such a good woman. And, like, you can see that she loves you, whether you're scoring a Test 100. She will treat you the same whether you're scoring a Test 100 in
You say that. Zealand. She's very quick to criticize me, she is.
That's what mothers are there for, right?
Yeah.
That's okay. It keeps you grounded. Skolzy, it's been, the time has flown by, actually. We could have actually spoken for hours, but just like some other talk shows around the world, the Ellen Show. We won't, yes. This is not the first time, the last time you'll be on The Biggest Man in Cricket. You know, you'll probably charge me an appearance fee the next time you're on there, but
I've not got the email for this one.
You'll get a little gift from our partners, Field and Field Store. So you'll get something nice from them, a nice clothing voucher from Field Store. You just happen to be our partners for the final session of this called The Declaration.
Oh, nice.
Okay, so this is quick fire questions. Okay. Beautiful. And just quick answers.
Need a warm up for this.
Okay, so I've actually changed the one or two of these questions while we've chatted, yeah. Test Championship, first question. Test Championship. Who got the bill for all the beers in the celebration?
Vicky Sirabata.
That was a very quick answer. Does he normally get?
No.
Who normally gets the ball?
Probably Marco Jansen.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. I'm going to change that. Tony DeSouza is a very generous man.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That's good to know.
Not David Bidding.
How many times have you got the ball?
Not often.
Yeah. When home series.
Yeah, I'm very good at when it's the last round, all of a sudden I'm exhausted. And I need to...
Who is your first your most underrated teammate you've had?
Dane Patterson.
Worst roommate that you've ever roomed with?
Dejan Kalin.
Why?
Snores. Okay. So loud.
Wow, okay. Funniest rumor you've ever heard about yourself?
I know this is quick fire. I'm laughing.
That's fine.
Probably that I'm 1.8 meters tall.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's, I mean,
that's actually, shape. I think it's on Google. If you type in my height, I think it comes up at like 1.8.
Just underneath you hit the winning rounds in the dead.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What was your first big purchase when you earned your first professional salary?
Apple Watch.
Nice. 2027 World Cup squad. Or 2027 Test Championship squad, Test Championship final squad?
2027 Test Championship final squad, winning final squad.
Nice. Over the 2027 World Cup squad?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a great answer. I like that. Skullsy, as I said, this is to be continued.
TBC.
TBC.
I'm gonna think back to what like Justin Bieber and Taylor Swift got on. No, she wouldn't have done Ellen. I know Justin Bieber's done Ellen quite a few times. So yeah. I want to see what gifts he started getting from his second appearance.
By the time we've reached that stage of the biggest man in cricket, we'll be able to give you whatever your agent. I'm gonna actually have to chat to your agent and make sure that you're available then. Now I can't just WhatsApp you directly, maybe in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, I think that's
so until then, until you become too big for the biggest man in cricket, we are giving you some bootlegged coffee to take home with you. Thank you very much for being on here, a Single Origin. I know you like your coffee. You enjoy a bit of home coffee.
Yeah, you see, that's something I would have liked to have spoken about. I'm a professional barista.
Yeah.
So this is quite exciting.
Professional meaning what? In your mind or?
No, I'm a qualified barista. Yeah. Last year March. Obviously there's promotion relegation now for domestic teams.
Yeah.
So last year, March, we were sort of coming to the end of the season. Western Province was stone last on the promotion relegation list. So we were looking like we're certainly going to get relegated. We had three games to play, of which I think we needed to win two to stay in Division One.
Mm-hmm.
Really dark times for Western Province. And obviously as the captain of Western Province, I gave a speech after one of our losses and I said, boys, like you need to start taking a bit more pride. We need to start caring about the badge more. We've got training tomorrow. Everyone needs to rock up and be on it. Like, it's do or die now. And then instead of going to that training, I went to my barista course for 8 hours and got a certificate. And I'm now a qualified barista. And we managed to stay in Division One. So
that is a great way to...
Brilliant.
That's a great way to end. Inspirational stuff from Kyle Moreno. Skullsy. Thank you very much for being here today and really look forward to seeing your journey over the next couple of years. You'll always be a favourite of the biggest man in cricket. You'll always be welcome back here. Thanks very much for being on. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Paul.
Lovely. And this is lovely too.